everybody, and welcome back to Make It Sound Fiction. This is episode 13. We are the podcast that every week picks apart pop culture and media that we like. No take backs. I'm your host, Nico, and I'm joined here by my wonderful co-host,
Tyler.
And we're going to be bringing you all sorts of wonderful, interesting topics of things that we found interesting this week. And there were quite a few. And we also got a lot of fan feedback about the show this week. So that was actually pretty exciting because we never get that.
Yeah.
And that also means that we're probably going to be talking about Dark Souls this week because we
finally.
It never stops. It never stops with you, Tyler. It never stops. The Dark Souls never ends. This is the Dark Souls of friendship.
No, no.
It's awful. But we are going to be talking about Dark Souls this week because one of our...
It's a new game that came out. And
one of our listeners, Paneria, actually wanted to know from Tyler what the point of Dark Souls is, because I don't...
Yeah, the better question is asking you what the point of Dark Souls is.
No fucking point. There's no point. But before we get to that, we have a couple other things that we want to talk about. Namely, that we're going to see Geralt of Rivia's abs in real life.
Yeah, finally. Hopefully he's naked in a tub.
If they don't... Okay,
if they don't do that, I'm mad.
Yeah, The Witcher is obviously we've known for a while that The Witcher is coming to Netflix as a TV show, which is I feel like uniquely suited for our particular podcast, given that we do like video games and also Netflix shows. They announced this week that they finally have cast an actor for Geralt, and it will be Henry Cavill.
Yeah, with a mustache.
Obviously. But
he has to have a beard. That's like, he has to have a beard. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
because I don't know when the game takes place, because I think, I don't know a lot of, I've played The Witcher 3, but I don't know a lot about like the bigger lore and stuff. I want to say The Witcher 3 is like the latest in terms of the lore, and that's when he's like the most grizzled. So yeah. I don't know if the show takes place. I think it's going to take place before. I don't think it's going
to
take place.
It has to.
Yeah.
It has to, because I think Henry Cavill is a little bit too young to be playing Geralt from Witcher 3,
yeah,
as far as I can tell.
Well, and then there was a casting thing today that sounds like Ciri is going to be pretty young. So,
yeah,
and
so
she's older
like,
in three.
Because the thing is that the TV show is not going to be directly based on the game. It's based on the books.
Yeah, yeah. Because they've already made a TV show before of The Witcher.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be, I think it'll probably start out, you know, from Witcher 1. And I kind of actually hope that the TV show does a better job from what it sounded like The Witcher 1 was as a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like Witcher 1 and 2... from what I've understood of other people, is that Witcher 1 and 2 were definitely based on the books in some capacity, but they didn't really quite
The Witcher
nail
1 was
the execution.
Very much a video gamey, like, I mean, it, I think it was pretty, I think all the games have adhered to the books fairly okay, but I think that, yeah, like, it felt like the first one was just very, like, immature video gamey, and the second one had parts of that, and I think it got better in terms of scope. But then the third one feels like it finally got a little bit more mature in terms of like understanding what the world is and not just giving into what video games are supposed to be.
Mature as in actual mature and not mature as in video games seem to think, which is just boobies.
Yeah, not that. I don't mean that. Yeah. I mean, there are, but no.
There's definitely titties in Witcher 3 for sure. But I thought it was really interesting that Henry Cavill was brought on for a couple of reasons, because apparently the showrunner, Lauren Hissrich, had wanted Henry Cavill from the beginning.
Which is weird to me, but because, I mean, not that Henry Cavill is a bad actor or anything, but it's just an interesting choice to really like to have somebody like him that you really want. I don't know. That's just weird, but sure.
I mean, as far as I know from television and Hollywood production stuff, that can happen quite a bit, especially when an actor and a director, like, you see that a lot with actors and directors a lot.
Yeah, like, what's his name? Like, in Drive, my gosh, Ryan Gosling and that director, they work together a lot, right? So.
Oh, yeah. Nicholas Winding Refn and Ryan Gosling work together a lot.
Yeah.
I know that Edgar Wright works with the same sort of stable of actors a ton. Mm-hmm. Edgar Wright works so much with, like...
What's his name? Wow, I'm really bad at naming directors today. The Kill Bill guy works with, like, the same people all the time.
Oh, Tarantino? Yeah, Tarantino. Yeah, absolutely. Tarantino works, like, with the same actors a lot. Or he's just also obsessed with Uma Thurman, as we know, which is interesting because it came out, like, just a couple of months ago that Uma Thurman has an extremely horrifying relationship with Tarantino, which made me hate him even more, but I digress.
Yeah.
I think, because, okay, so Lauren Hissrich was, this is her first, I don't know if this is her first time being a showrunner versus a writer. Yeah, I was just going to say,
has she been a showrunner on anything?
She's a showrunner, and because she's done two other, she's written two other shows for Netflix, which was, I think, Daredevil.
She wrote that? Oh, okay. The first season?
Yeah.
Or, like, all of it?
She may have done season two.
Okay.
Versus,
I like season two. She's done two Daredevil. A lot, is, so.
Yeah, she's done Daredevil and The Defenders.
Okay.
As far as writing credits. And this, I think, her first time being a showrunner. And I think that that's actually really kind of good because she seems to have, like, a really awesome sensibility in terms of, like, diverse casting and having a diverse writing room with lots of, like, women and people of color.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's one of the places where The Witcher has sort of notably had some issues.
There's a thing going around today that they're looking for a young woman to play, like, Ciri, maybe, she might not be white in the show, apparently, because she's white in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that that was one of the things with the game, where a lot of people were, like, really into it being predominantly white because it's supposedly, you know, fantasy Poland, except for the fact that fantasy Poland is very close to fantasy Turkey, and fantasy Turkey has a lot of not white people in it. So, you know, so it's like... I'm hoping that the fact that it's not part of video game culture in quite the same way and that it's TV means that they can take some much needed liberties with shaping the story in their sort of their own image and that Lauren and her writing team brings their sensibilities to the story and things of that. It'll be really interesting to see because I've never played the Witcher games. And I know that you mentioned this. It'd be really interesting to watch the show as somebody who never played the games. And this would be my sort of entrance into the Witcher
world. The
world
and the tone
lore.
Is what's strong for me. The game stuff where you have to play it is not the most interesting. So I think that as a show, it could be good. I think it's, if you like Game of Thrones, I think The Witcher could definitely get, like, sort of tap that same interest for you because it's very, like, politics heavy and it has, like, fantasy stuff, obviously, like, magic and stuff compared to, like, Game of Thrones, but it's not, like, I always think of, like, Game of Thrones as very, like, about, like, very much about, like, the politics and the characters, and then occasionally you get, like, a dragon, and when that happens, though, it's like, oh my gosh, a dragon? That's wild, because it's, like, you're not used to it within the fiction of the show, but The Witcher is the same way, I think, but even with, like, despite it having magic and, like, witches and stuff, it feels like when a dragon exists, it's like, oh, wow, this is a big deal, so that means that, like, it's a fantasy world that isn't, like, I don't know, extravagant with spells and stuff, wizards, which is maybe, I think that fits for, like, a Netflix show, but also I think it helps people get into it a little bit better instead of just being completely, you know, fantasy.
Yeah. Now, I also know that we were talking a bit about whether or not we think Geralt is going to necessarily be the focal point or the main character of the series.
Yeah, I think he is the main character of the games, obviously, and is the main character of the books. I'd assume he's that. Well, there actually was a synopsis for the Netflix show that came out today or yesterday or something.
Yeah,
that says
on,
like it's about
PC
like,
Gamer, maybe.
Yeah, it's a it, well, it says it's about like the Witcher, like a mutated like monster hunter, like deals with people or something. Like, I think it probably will be, but the part that I always tell you about The Witcher 3 is that it is about Geralt, but it's not, because he, like, I don't know, I always feel like Witcher 3 understands that he's boring, and so it definitely does a lot to make you interested in other characters like Yennefer and Ciri and stuff. So I,
but that's also, yeah, that's also the thing that you can do with TV versus games.
Right, so games, I hope that they do that.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be really missing out of, I think that'd be really missing out on what makes TV sort of beautiful, in that it doesn't have to be interactive. So you can take moments to really kind of tell these like A plot, B plot, C plot stories and build up characterizations from moment to moment of the other characters, and not just how they're related to Geralt necessarily, because if you play video games, you're always acting as Geralt. You're always seeing the story from Geralt's perspective, and TV doesn't necessarily have to do that, which is cool.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I like The Witcher 3, is The Witcher 3 doesn't always surround Geralt. Like, it has moments where it's like, oh, you're just actually, I mean, you're not playing as Yennefer or something, but you see what she's doing and you're not even there, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and then also just stuff will happen and you feel more like a viewer than a person sometimes in that game. And I hope that happens in the show. The other thing that makes me, optimistic is that the Daredevil, whatever, like, all see, like, the, I guess there's only two seasons, right? Is there two? Is there three?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the other characters were pretty good, and sometimes you weren't super interested in Daredevil himself. It was more just, like, what are the other characters dealing with?
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like that, if you know the showrunner is able to do that in Daredevil, I you know, hopefully it happens in The Witcher.
Yeah, same. I mean, it's
because he isn't, Geralt is not a very interesting character, and I feel like by design, because the world is like, it, he's supposed to be the guy that is just like, whoa, what is happening, like, what is all this stuff? So
I mean, Henry Cavill can do that very well, I think.
Yeah
Which I think Henry Cavill isn't as bad of a choice if they're going with a younger thing. It's just really interesting. I think Lauren kind of had him locked in. Although if I was a showrunner and was getting the fucking Netflix money, I would also be like, who do I think is fucking gorgeous? I'll just cast him in my show. But it should be noted that Henry Cavill is actually a huge gamer. Like, Henry Cavill is...
Right, he played, like, WoW and stuff, too.
He plays World of Warcraft a lot. And he actually was playing World of Warcraft when he got the call that he was going to be Superman.
Yeah.
So, like, I think he's probably freaking out that this, the chance to play, like, a big, well-known, you know, video game character is probably a big coup for him. But it'll be interesting to see how they do that, and mostly really kind of work on all of the women characters in The Witcher, because I think that that's going to be a much more compelling addition to the story.
Yeah.
Than just, and it's, you know,
I'm crossing my fingers, because the women characters in The Witcher 3 are so cool, and you don't, even though you get a lot of time with them, you don't get enough, because, like, I don't know, like, one of them time travels, like, it's amazing, like, it's, they're really cool.
Yeah. Well, I think that might be, and I'm like being a little bit more charitable than I ought to be, but I think that will be, that is one of the reasons I like the fact that Lauren's team seems to be so heavily stocked with women, because I think that Geralt in the hands of women writers, and, you know, might bring a different sort of take on his personality,
and
how he interacts with women versus what video games have sort of done typically. So it'll be really interesting to just see kind of what their spin on this all is. So, yeah. But I'm just excited. I'm just excited about more fantasy stuff coming to...
We don't know when it's coming out,
coming,
right?
Coming to Netflix. Early estimates seem to be 2020, so it'll be a while.
2020? Really? And there's already like a little synopsis thing, huh?
Yeah. 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
The only problem is that I have a feeling that if they're just announcing casting now, that means that they haven't even started shooting.
Yeah, I guess so. So
yeah.
Plus they always really, they shoot it all and then release it instead of, well, I guess they do that with regular shows too. Never mind. I don't know.
Some do, some don't.
Yeah.
But it will be 8 episodes. So I have a feeling it's 8 hours versus like half hours, which means like that's like shooting 4 movies back to back. So it
That's interesting because that means that it will be coming out after like Game of Thrones has its second to last season, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I really do think that that comparison is going to be made for people who don't already know. Like, they're very similar. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, for sure. So, other things that we've been watching, actually, which I was not expecting this to show up on our podcast notes, but
Dark Souls lore videos. Yeah, I love them. What's your favorite? I don't really like Foddy Video that much, but Epic Name Bro is usually my go-to.
No.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know who got into this first. Maybe it was me.
Always watched woodworking stuff, but recently you got into it, I guess?
Yeah, I guess the other day, I do occasionally like to chill. Like, I watch a lot of cooking videos.
Yeah, that's usually my thing.
To chill out. Yeah, we watch a lot of cooking videos. We're both huge, like, Bon Appetit fans.
Yeah.
We love that channel. But the other day, I got recommended by the algorithm a woodworking video.
That's weird. I wonder how you got recommended that.
I don't know. I watch a lot of Tested now.
Oh, that's actually probably out. Yeah,
so okay. I'm like fully in the like maker part of YouTube now. So like, I think it was because like a couple of the woodworking people do make like kind of nerdy stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's probably kind of how it got there. But I started watching this one guy. Who I can't even remember.
Yeah,
now.
I'm not going to be able to remember the names. We'll make sure to have like maybe a link to a couple of our favorites.
We'll have links. But I
because okay, one like, thing that's funny about woodworking channels is it's usually just like the guy's name.
Yeah, it's never like a brand.
Yeah,
like the first guy I started watching is called Johnny Makes, I think, and he's all right. He's definitely of a type of woodworking guy that basically. I guess just gets paid to like make woodworking projects and has like really good high. See, a lot of these guys have like these really high production values to their videos, like with like obviously somebody who edits and shoots it, very high quality, chill background music, very sort of like hipster sort of projects. Like this
a voiceover
is not,
like,
some...
that's like a podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Voiceover that's like a podcast, like very like Binging with Babish style.
Yeah.
And so Johnny Makes does that. And then I found another guy that's very similar to him, but that I like better called Four Eyes, who is also known, I think his actual name is like Chris Salamone or Salamone. And the reason I like Chris's videos is because he's got kind of that like quirky hipster dude sort of sense of humor, but he also kind of has pretty self-aware, insightful things to say about the nature of like making stuff and creativity and stuff. Like I actually linked this like clip to Tyler where he's talking about because one of the first projects I watched him make was a river table, which apparently is a very popular thing in woodworking. The woodworking scene right now is a river table, which is a table that has a large chunk of the middle cut out in sort of an irregular way and then filled in with an epoxy resin that glows blue because of the, you know, kind of properties of light passing through it. So it looks very beautiful, but it's very popular. And Chris decided to make a version of a river table that was made out of concrete and Legos. Legos sort of standing in for the place of the epoxy. And he was talking about why he did this project, and he said it's because when I see something, you know, get super popular, I always feel this kind of like, you know, anxiety about it, or I'm very sensitive to it because it always feels like people let sort of the project be say something versus being creative. And he gets like very anxious about that. And so he kind of made it as kind of a reaction to things that are sort of popular and people doing them because the sort of like idea of what a river table should look like is so cemented in YouTube culture that he wanted to kind of buck that trend. And I found that was really interesting because I wasn't expecting it to to kind of come out of a woodworking video.
Yeah, the way he was talking about it was kind of funny because it was like he had never really, it sounded to me like he had never really said it out loud. Like he has these like really like layered opinions about like creativity and making things, and he just sort of was like, well, I don't know, I this is just like things I think about. And it's like, but that, you know, like I guess for like a YouTube audience it's hard to say that kind of thing, but like if you look at like critical writing, that's the kind of stuff people always sort of get at. So it was just kind of funny to see them talk about it and be like, I don't know if anybody else thinks this.
Well, it's also really interesting because I never would have thought that about woodworking, probably because woodworking is not my creative outlet. I'm not a woodworker. I don't know much about woodworking. Neither do you, I presume.
Yeah.
We tend to watch this stuff because it like it's just relaxing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I do watch it because I think of it as like a form of creating things differently.
Yeah, for sure. I like it that it's relaxing, but I also love watching like carpet cleaning videos because it's relaxing. Yeah. Oh, fucking love
people
carpet
working
cleaning
on
videos.
Lathes is really satisfying. Like that's the guy I've been watching. He does a lot of lathe work, and it's just like taking this like chunky piece of wood down to this smooth bowl, and it's so satisfying to watch. And also, just he does like these like it's so weird how like the woodworking videos. Compared to like cooking videos where you can find a lot of cooking videos, but the camera work can be kind of shoddy. Like it can be like, okay, this person's just like like holding the camera in their other hand, so it's shaky and bad and not in focus. Or it's like they put it here, but they're like the shot isn't like wide enough, so they're like off the screen kind of, or you can't see in the bowl or whatever, you know. And then obviously like, you know, bigger channels like Eater or something have like, you know, an actual budget for that and stuff. But it seems like a lot of woodworking videos are just like weirdly good because this guy, I'm pretty sure he's by himself. The guy, I forget his name. I'll link it in. This is the, like my favorite guy lately. But his videos have like he does like slow-mo. I think his stuff is 60 FPS. It's like, you know, like 1080p kind of stuff. Like he probably shoots it in higher than that. And he does like these really zoomed in shots and like the, I guess it's like, wouldn't it be like the, I don't know camera terms, but whatever. You can see that, like, you can see him like using the lathe. Like you can see the chips of wood like coming off like in like slow motion and stuff. So it's just like really satisfying to watch and really like kind of beautifully shot. And so I think that is sort of why he gets like a lot of views just from like the visual angle of it, because people are like, ooh, this is like satisfying, kind of like you're saying, it's satisfying to watch. But he also just makes like these really cool projects, like these like a lot of bowls and stuff. Like he seems to really like the lathe. But I think the other thing is like we were talking about a second ago of like the podcast like voiceover. But the one thing I really do like about him is that so he did this one video that sort of impressed me because it was like, oh, this guy likes making things, like he likes experimenting with like being creative, and he knows like pacing and stuff from like a film perspective, because he did this video about making an ornament for Christmas, and he intercut it with shots of him and his family going out to cut a tree down, and he like did it to where it was like they're driving along the way, he's picking out a piece of wood, and then it like cuts to where they're looking for the wood, and then it like, and then it cuts back to him in his shop like cutting down the wood, and then he basically the ornament is like this like kind of like lathed orb around a little tree, and like when he makes the little tree, you can see them like picking, he cuts back to the family out in the like snowy mountain or whatever, that not mountain, I don't know where they were, I think he lives in Oregon, so somewhere, picking out a tree, and then they like as they're cutting the tree down and it's falling down, he's like using a little saw to cut off the little tree he made, and like he keeps cutting back and forth, and I'm like, whoa, this is like really kind of good. Like he understands like kind of like the like what would it be like, I don't just like the building this
building
story
narrative.
So it's just like, oh, this is really cool, this guy's like into this. And at the end he has like his kids like put it on the tree, you know, like at the tree that they finished, and it feels like a journey. And that one actually had no voiceover, but it's just I think the reason I actually do like watching woodworking videos especially is finding like the ways people are creative and like can like create things like that, like the narrative, but don't even like, that's not even like the draw of his channel. Like it seems like the draw of his channel, like I said, is like making cool things, like, oh, here's a really like intricate soccer ball made out of wood or something like that, right? And that looks really cool. It's great, but there's so much like thought that he puts into the videos that there's a little bit more invisible, I think. And it's like it's really cool to catch that stuff and be like, oh, this guy's like really into like even doing shots of like, okay, he put his camera like next like on the thing he's cutting, so it has like that, what do you call that, like the, what do you call it when like you attach the camera to like a moving object and it sort of like is locked to the moving thing? There's a name for that, right?
I know there's a name for that and I cannot remember.
But he does that where it's just like, oh, instead of just showing him cutting this thing, he put it on the thing he's cutting so it's like locked to it and it has like a, it just feels like it's something. Like it feels like it's more kind of directed than just, you know, showing somebody cutting a piece of wood. And I just really that.
I just want to know why woodworking in particular seems to have this issue, like seems to have, not this issue, but this like, this visual.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because cooking videos don't do that all the time. And cooking videos are very visual.
Makeup videos definitely do not all the time, which is funny because makeup videos easily have one of the easiest like lighting and visual setups. You just set it on your face and you have like, you know, like a key light and like overall, like, you know, maybe a circle light or things like that. Yeah. And I want to think that maybe it's because the types of guys that can afford to do woodworking videos on YouTube also probably like film, also probably know how to work cameras, and like the guy that I typically watch, he's easily got thousands and thousands of dollars of woodworking equipment in his garage. So clearly they're affluent on some level, which
they're
means
very
he also
I think some of the overlap is that they're into the specifics of stuff and how things work. And so I think that
aesthetics.
And aesthetics. So I think they're very into like, ooh, I can figure out how a camera works. I've never done this before, but I'll figure it out. And I really like to like look at my stuff from different angles and show it off.
Or woodworking is like the side hobby and that their main jobs are something else. Yeah. Like, the guy that I watched also does a lot of like explanations for how to do stuff with Google SketchUp. Mm-hmm. And he also works exclusively in a Mac environment, so it makes me think that he is a designer of
Mac
some description.
Yeah,
so editing video and doing voiceover work with a Mac is so much easier than like having a PC set up specifically for that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of wonder if the methodology is somewhat determined by the fact that a lot of these guys are like affluent young white guys versus like what I used to typically think of woodworking was your dad.
Yeah, that's actually the guy that I watch is very much a dad. But it's like so charming because the guy I was watching, he also does things where it's like, I made a big mess with my like saw or whatever, or like the CNC table. And he's like, time to clean it up. And then he does a stop motion cleanup. And it's like it's a stop motion like cleanup that's like really neat. And then he also does things randomly throughout his videos where he needs to put a bunch of pieces together. He'll have them like circle around in stop motion and then like grow up into like an orb or whatever, like connect to each other. He does like little fun things like that. And it's just like this guy just likes like editing and making little videos. Like, yes, he likes the woodworking stuff, but he clearly loves the like filmmaking part of it. And that's really cool to me.
I also really like the fact that like woodworking and making maker videos seem to have so much of their own like dedicated audiences of people who also make stuff. So like cooking videos,
it's a lot of people
lot
who
of
don't know.
Because cooking videos tend to have a lot of people who just like watching food being made, but that's because everybody eats food. Not everybody wants to make woodworking stuff.
A lot of comments are like, can I do this with my recipe or whatever? It's like, oh, I don't usually put that in it or whatever. Like,
like people always have access to food. People don't always have access to woodworking. And so I feel like a lot of the like actual audience for like woodworking videos are people who also want to know how to make this stuff themselves in their own garage with their own tools and stuff like that.
That's what's so cool about the maker community is they just share that stuff forever.
But it also brings up really interesting insights into things that I would have never thought about, which is like apparently there is a lot of discourse about using CNC tools.
We didn't explain that what that people, is. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't explain what CNC is.
I don't actually know what it stands for.
Okay, so a CNC machine is called, it stands for a computer numeric control tool, okay. Which is basically a sort of bench setup. So think of like a table saw, anything that you do with woodworking. Yeah. You know, you usually have like a metal frame and then a long like sheet of something that's the tool sits on. Now, with a CNC, it has an arm going across and an arm kind of interacting with that. And then it has like something that looks kind of like a laser sitting at the center of that. Because what a CNC tool does is it does cutting out of wood pieces, but with like basically a laser. Instead of like, so it lets you input using special software any cut and any design you can think of, and then the machine will actually translate that design and cut it into the wood.
Right.
No human interaction. Well,
you made the model probably, but yeah, you don't actually.
You made the model, but it does all the cutting itself. Now, the only thing is that like typically if you're doing something that isn't just a straight cut through and it's like digging stuff out of a piece of wood, it takes a lot longer because the tool has to be adjusted to the height, like the depth of what's going to be cut. And it basically moves in these like slow lines. Yeah,
the guy I was just talking about did like a Mount Hood like 3D model with one, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. But it basically lets you cut a ton of very specific shapes, depths, cutouts, that sort of thing. Three-dimensional stuff, depending on how big the block of wood is. Completely computer designed. So you can do these like very technically difficult things very easily because it's a computer, meaning that like there's no human error and there's no need for like human judgment on how to like measure things. But here's the thing. As with any sort of process where computers have been added, there's purists who think that woodworking should be kept to human and traditional tools only. There's people that are so Luddite that are like, hand tools only, no power tools, that sort of thing. And apparently this is a big deal in the woodworking community.
It reminds me of like music stuff where people using like electronic, like drums and stuff, people get like frowned upon.
Yeah. It just is interesting because as somebody who spends a ton of time around like the discourse of like video games, it's really fun to experience the discourse of something I have no personal stake in. And it's funny because
you
watch
like these people and like you can tell like that that's something on their mind, you know? Like, because the guy I was just watching, like I was just talking about, he had a video where he uses it a lot. He doesn't do the thing where it's like, I'm not going to use it. But he had one video where he said, like, I was going to just do it on the CNC, but I kind of want to keep this one, like, without the CNC because I've already, like, never done it on any parts of this. And I was just like, oh, yeah, he, like, considered that for a moment. He's like, should I do it? And he's like, I'll just do it by hand. Like, it's fine. So.
Yeah. The guy that I watch, Four Eyes, he made a CNC cut planter kit thing that was basically six interlocking random shapes that could be like pulled apart and sort of rearranged to make other different shapes. That was really cool. But he also was like, you know, I got a lot of comments from people that were unhappy with me using a CNC machine. So I decided to figure out a way to do the project in a simpler way that you can just do with like power tools. And so he modified it so that it was like six regular triangles that also were kind of cut the same way. But then he did it with it, like, you know, his own power tools. So he figured out a way to do the project without a CNC tool. But I thought it was really funny that that was something he had to concern himself with.
Does it ever amaze you, though? Like, the biggest disconnect for me where I almost feel, like, pathetic, where it's like, I don't even know how it, like, okay, I watch this guy, and he's like, yeah, I had to cut this way because it wouldn't fit, like, on this axis here, and I had to make sure the angle was right. And then I need to make sure that when I flip this around to attach this here, it's going to be the right shape. And I'm just like, how do you think about this, like, in a 3D... Like, how do you make these, like, several pieces that lock together that you know you just, like, lock them this way together and then sand them down this way or cut this angle? Like, I just always feel like, gosh, that is so beyond me because, like, I can barely think about, like, anything like that. Like, you know, it's just like, how does this guy just like, because a lot of the things that these like woodworking people do is they, you know, they like kind of visualize it and then like rough it out and then like, you know, obviously like, you know, tighten it up and stuff and then just do it.
Yeah.
And then there's also those moments too where they'll be like, oh yeah, duh, like it has to be a 90 degree angle here. I'm just going to set my saw to that and do it. And it's just like, how do you, like, that's so much for my brain that, because I'm not used to it. And it's kind of amazing.
Or they like the guy I watch specifically makes like little scrap jigs out of scrap,
yeah,
pieces
too.
Of wood,
yeah,
that basically like help him like cut down on production, mm-hmm, time, because basically what he does with his table saw is he makes a jig that stops the blade, like stops the piece of wood he's cutting at a certain point so that he can go through and like rough cut 6 pieces all the same,
right,
size without even having to worry about where to stop.
Yeah.
Because he just sets up a block of wood to like, so that when his block of wood hits it, it just stops, he stops cutting,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the guy I watch like does things where he's like, okay, these are the pieces, and he'll visually like model them on the screen and then have them like lock into each other through an animation.
Yeah, mine does that,
yeah,
too. And that kind of makes me wonder if, like, yeah, a lot of these guys have been able to spring up because of the way that computer-aided design,
yeah,
tools have gotten. Like, CAD and AutoCAD and stuff used to be very archaic, very hard to use. And now we have something free and easy like Google SketchUp.
Yeah.
And you can just design 3D. You can design 3D models of the things that you want to build, and they're specifically designed so that you can pull them apart and use tools to figure out the lengths and stuff like that. And I think that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. I do find that there are often videos with this guy where I just can't follow him when he's like, okay, yeah,
exactly, like I don't know how you translate,
right,
this into how you use this tool to make,
yeah,
that,
because he'll be like, yeah,
like
we obviously need to make this little tiny like 1-inch piece to fit on the top of this, and I'm just, mm-hmm, like, on the top of what, and it's 1-inch wide, and I was like, I have no idea, but sure, just make it. Just go, I trust you.
Yeah. I just think the beauty of this is maybe why I still am really interested in like watching YouTube stuff, because I think that a lot of YouTube has like turned into like reality TV show light, mm-hmm, basically, but I think it's still a wealth of,
yeah,
there's information
still stuff
about,
yeah,
people making
that's
stuff.
That's why, yeah,
too.
That's why this is, I probably, yeah, like you always go like, how are you watching like so many videos on YouTube? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the kind of random stuff I watch. It's just like random people doing their own thing. I don't watch like the,
yeah,
Tonight Show on YouTube, you know?
I like this so much,
yeah,
better than the endless amounts of like drama.
Yeah, I don't watch any.
YouTube
is basically a space for me to watch other people be creative for the most part. That's what I,
yeah,
watch YouTube for.
I get a little bit guilty of that in some ways because I always feel like, oh, me watching someone make something
is
me getting out of not making things myself.
Yeah, I've had that feeling too.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I can't afford to make things.
Also, it's
very
good
often
to just see that it's like these, like somehow this woodworking stuff is probably going to affect me making things, you know?
Yeah. Oh no, like for sure, because the way that they, here's the thing that I think a lot of people in video games specifically don't realize is that having hobbies and passions and interests and knowledge outside of just video games will always help you make video games.
Yeah.
And we don't make video games, we are writers. But as writers, you're expected to indulge in other forms of artistic creativity. And yeah, maybe I'm never going to build a fucking chair and never be able to afford to build a fucking chair because,
yeah,
I don't have thousands of dollars of woodworking equipment. But watching someone else be creative in that way will ultimately maybe give me some insight into how I should think about my own,
yeah,
woodworking.
Because on a broad level,
with
it's
words,
the same thing.
It's always the same thing. It's that light bulb moment. It's figuring out how you want to put something together, how that process influences what the final project,
yeah,
is going to be, and then how you feel about that project.
Yeah, my guy turned making an ornament into a story. Like, it's a story.
Yeah. And how can I turn my own creative endeavors into a story? Yeah. How can I turn my own creative endeavors into something I'm proud of and something, and how, what is my project saying about how I feel about creativity in the world around yeah. me? What is it saying about my values? And it, that can be a chair, that can be a bowl, that can be, you know, plumbing.
Yeah, I watched
cosplay.
I watched the guy make painting. make tubing for like a dust collection.
Yeah, even carpet cleaning.
Carpet cleaning.
Carpet cleaning. It's a skill.
Claire making salad is a story, though. Am I right?
You need to chill. She's not at Bon Appetit anymore.
I know, I'm gonna cry.
You need to let it go. We'll miss you, Claire. R.I.P.
She's not dead.
She just left.
She better be on videos because the heck.
I know. We're gonna miss Claire so much.
There's so many snack foods that she needs to make, you know?
I know. Claire Saffitz left Bon Appetit, and that's like the biggest drama in our worlds right now, which you can kind of says a lot of things about our lives. But yeah, yeah. Claire Saffitz leaving Bon Appetit is really sad. So anyway.
Heartbreaking.
I know. We'll miss her. But finally is to kind of cap off the show, and I don't know how we're going to cap off the show with this particular topic, and but let's try and rein it in, Tyler. We got a fan comment.
Anonymous question too.
So, why don't you talk about this, Tyler?
The tweet or just the thing?
The tweet.
The tweet? Well, you're the one that has the tweet up. I can't read it. But yeah.
Okay. So we did get a question from Panaria, who is one of our more vocal fans, which is awesome. She was asking that, she was basically asking, I want an MISF cast episode now of Tyler Culp's opinion on what the point of Dark Souls is, since he didn't go further
last week.
What
were we talking about relation to that?
Hollow Knight,
duh. Yeah.
What is the point of Dark Souls for you, Tyler?
I don't know. It changes a lot, honestly.
Also, try and keep it under 15 minutes.
I don't know. I mean, okay. I guess this is so hard because the thing I really like about Dark Souls that I think that is typically a little bit more unpopular, I think, for a lot of people, a lot of gamers, I don't know. Like, okay, a lot of people play Dark Souls as like a difficult game that is like challenging and has combat that lets you sort of explore different ways you want to deal with it. Like, you can be a spellcaster, you can be, you know, a sword and shield guy, you can be a two-hander dude with like a big axe or something. And there's lots of bosses, and they're creepy looking, they're dragons and stuff like that. And, you know, the game, like, you just, you know, there's a big health bar on the bottom of the screen, you're fighting big monsters, and you're saving the world eventually, you know, or, well, I mean, you don't, but you know what I mean? Like, and I think that the reason I like Dark Souls is because, at least the first one mainly, but the series in general, it has that, like, it feels, something about Dark Souls to me has always felt like, here's a video game where you're doing video game things of like, you know, it's an RPG, you're leveling up, you're getting better, you're killing monsters, but there's so much more to it. There's so much more, both in like tone and atmosphere and like themes and stuff, that is happening than just you being the hero. And that's sort of why I think Dark Souls is like really important to me, because I always feel like Dark Souls is an argument that like, you can do more with what is the normal thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's a game with all the normal stuff, but there's, if you just pay a little bit more attention or just like take a little bit more time, there's just a ton more things to like discover about it. And it has this, like, it's just sort of like it's like seeped in like mystery and rewarding you for paying attention to things that you might not. Because like, a lot of the like design of the game is, including like the combat and stuff too, is it kind of forces you to kind of question like what games have told, like other games have told you. Like, a lot of games are like, you know, you have a sword, just swing a lot of the enemy. But in Dark Souls, like, it's not about that, you know. It's more about like the back and forth. It's about like blocking an attack and then and then finding an opening in like the attacks of the enemy and going in for those times, and obviously being punished if you get a little greedy and like try to swing wildly, you know, at an enemy or something, as you know, Apple, right? So
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm bad.
But
at
yeah,
it.
But you understood. But you, I think you quickly understood, like, oh, this game wants me to be careful. Like, it wants me to pay attention to when I actually hit the button to swing my sword.
You pointed that out in specific, that you said that that was one of the, because I think we should maybe preface this a little bit, is that Tyler got both myself and our friend Hannah to start playing Dark Souls. And we've sort of stalled out a little bit because it is still a very hard game, and neither of us are very good at those. It's extremely hard. But he noticed a difference between me and Hannah's playstyle.
Yes. Yeah.
A little bit.
Because the game, like, okay, you play very slowly, which sounds like a bad thing because a lot of games are just so fast paced, right? And so it's like, and also, like, there's a lot of environments in games where there's nothing really there. Like, it's a hallway, like, okay, that has, like, pictures on the wall or environmental storytelling. Somebody wrote, like, they killed us or something. Yeah. But, like, Dark Souls, like, It does so much with everything at your disposal. So like when our friend Hannah was going through, she would just like run by a room and not pay attention that the room was even there, and then just fight the enemies in front of her. But then you would like check out the room and then realize that the room leads you up above the enemies or something. Yeah, I'm making this up, but there's definitely times like this. And it's like, oh, you're above the enemies. So that time when like Hannah had a hard time fighting the enemies head on, you just like landed on them and killed them instantly. Because the game is like, like you took a chance on just figuring out what this room was for, and then we're gonna reward you with being like, hey, there was enemies here, and now you get to have like a one up on them. And it's not just about like rewarding you with like little secrets. There's definitely lots of secrets and stuff like that, but it's just that like the game tries its best, but subtly, to be like, this world has more going on than just you running forward with your sword out. Like, we want you to pay attention. Yeah. We want you to talk to people and listen to what they have to say. And also, like, you know, ask yourself if that person is even like telling you the truth. You know, there's definitely characters where they're like, hey, I'm really nice, and like, you should bring me back to like your little home base. And there's characters that are very evil and like, will just lie to you. Including characters that say like, yay, you're the savior of us all. Like, you're gonna kill the final boss and help us all. And it's like, but then there's other characters that are like, that person's lying. You're actually not saving anything. You know, there's just so much in the game that is just like, it contradicts itself, but it does that so that you consider like your own path. Like, maybe this is what I want to do. Or like, maybe instead of just like, you know, like running through the level or something, I'm going to explore. And it definitely like, there's, I don't know how to, it's such a hard thing to explain, I guess, because it's like, there's just so much like meat. I don't know how else to say it. Like, there's like a ton of reason to spend your time exploring Dark Souls, and despite like doing the combat and stuff. And there's just so much there. Like, there's item descriptions that tell you different stories. There's like side stories that are really kind of compelling. And there's like the big story too that's interesting in its own way, especially since, you know, one big part about Dark Souls is that like, to stop playing is actually part of the fiction. Like, the whole like, I mean, I won't go too deep into it, but essentially, like, if you were to stop playing, that could be a way of beating the game in the fiction. Like, the fiction says, like, if you just stop and give up, you could be free. Because it's a hard game. Like, it knows it's hard. So, like, there's that too.
I find this interesting, because before I met you, I really thought that the point of Dark Souls was just the ultra hard, like, nightmare combat, because that's literally everything that anyone ever talked about. And so it was really funny when I met you, and you actually made it sound interesting, because for the first time I met somebody that really kind of like talked about the story, or how the environmental storytelling worked, or how the fiction of the world was seamlessly integrated with like the actual mechanics. Yeah. And like, people that went so gung-ho over the mechanical difficulty and the skill floor and ceiling and stuff like that made it so joke-worthy. But you were the first person for that reason that made me feel like there's actually something here,
cause it's
that
a,
I would
it's
care about.
It's a deeply sad game, but it's got like, it. There's like a, I don't know. There's just like a human like feeling to it, because it just feels like somebody, like it was directed by the better Miyazaki.
That's a conversation for another time, Tyler.
And it just feels like somebody, like there's times where sometimes it's funny, like the games are kind of funny in some ways, like there's times where it's like, really, you're gonna put a guy that can like push me off of this ledge across the way so I can't like attack him and I have to like carefully move across, and stuff like that just feels like, yeah, thanks game, like I could see why you put that enemy there. And then there's other times where it's just like, this is just super sad. Like, this is a weird example, but are we past like the time where I could spoil Demon Souls?
I think we're okay with spoiling
Demon Souls. I feel like Demon Souls is a really good example of what sort of fuels the like the feeling of Dark Souls. Is the final boss in Demon Souls. I mean, you could argue that the boss before this final fight, I guess, is the real boss, but the final boss in Dark Souls is like a character that is actually just a husk on the ground that's crawling at you and cannot like attack you, like barely can attack you. And like this like epic like music play, actually, no, I think it's like sad music that's playing, and it has a health bar on the bottom of the screen, but you're just hitting this like defenseless like person on the ground, and you feel horrible, and it feels pathetic. And because like the way that game just ends with something so sad and so like different, like you expect to fight some huge monster that's really hard, right? But it's not. It's just, it's like nothing.
That sort of like makes you feel heroic, right? And great.
And this is just like, no, he never was like great. Like he's just like this, like nobody cares. Like you're just like killing him. Like it doesn't even matter. Like he's already pretty much dead. And you're not really doing anything. And that feeling is just like, that is just like in, that's just like in every aspect of Dark Souls. It's just like, you should question what's happening. And also like, you're not the hero that you think you are, maybe. It's not as like cliche as like, you're just not the hero. It's not like you're an anti-hero.
You never were the hero.
It's never
hero,
that,
you know.
It's not that over, but it's stuff where it's just like, was that actually good? Like, who was that actually good for? Like, you killed this person, but like, I don't know. I mean, there's even parts where it's just like, you kill a boss and then you find like a secret room where it's like, oh, that boss was just trying to protect her family, you know? And it's like, oh, maybe you shouldn't have done that. And stuff like that. And so yeah.
So would you say that the kind of, I guess maybe to kind of maybe summarize a little
hard.
Bit
I like a
what
lot of
you're
things.
Saying. I know, yeah. It's hard. So you're saying that like the point of Dark Souls for you is it's a set of games that embody a sort of like sad, complicated aesthetic vision and ideas about games and their stories that also draw people in because those things are embodied with extremely demanding mechanics that ultimately make you walk away from them feeling more intensely and thinking about the things that you did.
Yeah, it's a game that feels just so aware of itself and so specific in its vision. Like, it 100% understands that most people will play the game as like a boss rush. But then I honestly feel like the first game at least like understands that people would do that and actually feels like they're not, I don't know. Like it almost feels like it knows that they're sort of playing it wrong, which I don't think you're playing it wrong if you play it that way. But I feel like the game is like, yeah, like you beat it, I guess, but you know, you missed a ton of stuff, you know, like I feel like the game
you
knows
missed
that.
Kind of the
yeah.
point. You missed kind
right.
of the point.
And okay. I think that a lot of games these days just don't seem to care too much about the smaller things. And I guess Dark Souls shows that, how if you put a lot of care in a lot of the small things, like this, you know, the sword you picked up is, you know, has like a history to it and stuff like that. But it's not just like stats and stuff, you know, like, yes, it maybe is a better sword. But I mean, even Dark Souls does the thing where like weapons and armor aren't just better. They're not just like, there's not like a epic piece of gear that is just better than your chest piece you have now, right? You could use the stuff from the beginning of the game throughout the whole game just because you think it looks cool or whatever. Like, it gives you that, it kind of, and in some ways, it kind of goes back to that like role-playing aspect like we were talking about with last week, right? Where it's like, there's actually like a point to just sort of caring about your character too. And I think that there's, like, okay, one of the interviews that came out from like Miyazaki is he was really inspired by like The Legend of Zelda, The way The Legend of Zelda, the first one, right? Because wasn't Miyamoto, didn't he say that, like, he created that game because he used to explore, like, caves? Right? Yeah. So, and I think Miyazaki, like, knew that and then also played the game and was just like, this is just so, like, mysterious, and it feels like everything is, like, kind of, like, everything is sort of, like, wondrous. Like, you're just interested in everything you're, like, discovering, and everything's new. And so if something about Dark Souls feels like it just really wants you to be curious about everything, it never wants you to just accept everything. And I think that is something games don't do anymore a lot. A lot of games, like, even just playing, like, Spider-Man recently, there's just stuff in that game already that is just like, oh, yeah, you played a video game before. Like, you know that, like, you got to chase this thing. You got to, like, follow this objective marker on the map, right? And there's this stuff about Dark Souls just like, yeah, you played games, but, you know, not everything's going to be the same here. This is its own world. Like, and I think that happens in film and stuff, right? Like, you see stuff like even Game of Thrones, we were talking about. There's stuff in Game of Thrones that is like, yeah, you understand fantasy, but that's not how this works. Like, the dragons in this show aren't just, like, all over the place. They're, like, really, like, built up, and they mean something, which is a little bit more rare, I guess, right?
You're saying it kind of like Dark Souls has, it wants to challenge that typical,
yeah,
in curiosity,
right. And I think a lot of video games don't like to challenge you with what it even means to be like a
Dark Souls is an open world.
It isn't. Yeah,
it's an extremely curated, crafted,
there's no collectibles because it doesn't want them, you know?
And I think that that's in kind of a world where there's a lot of, like, open world games and procedurally generated stuff. Not that that's
bad.
Yeah,
none of these things are bad.
But I feel like having that curated experience in the long run can be really good for developing and testing your own ideas about.
It feels specific and, like, creative in a way. It doesn't feel like it's trying to be the game for everyone forever. It feels like the game that is. Yeah. It feels like the game that somebody wanted to make and they made it. And
it's the game, the game for you. Yeah, right now. Yeah.
It's just something about, like, and I mean, obviously, I have. There's a lot of, like, you know, the aesthetics and stuff of Dark Souls is something I typically like anyway. So, you know, I can understand somebody not liking Dark Souls, but I feel like it's one of those things where, even if you didn't like it, you can understand that it's something really specific and maybe just not kind of for you, but it just feels so thorough. Like, everything just feels so thought about, and to the point where it just feels like it's worth your time every moment of it, which I just have a hard time with games like these days. Like, even like Nier, like, you play a game like Nier and it's like, that game has a lot of stuff going on too, but there's just a lot of stuff in it that just feels like, oh, you didn't really think about this that hard because it was just like a side mission. So I guess I'll just do it and get, like, the special, like, resources from it and move on. And Dark Souls just has so little of that. So much of it is just like, oh, you wanted me to do this side thing because it, like, showed me this other path, or it gave me this, like, weapon that has actually a really good story bit that I, like, reveals something huge on this random little, like, thing or whatever. Like, every single aspect of it just feels so thought out. And that is a little less so for me in the later games, but the series as a whole is just about, like, I don't know, like, just a game that just is so specific in, like, its intentions that it just feels like you're just, it just sort of surrounds you when you play it, and I just really love Dark Souls for, I mean, a lot more reasons what I'm saying, but this is sort of usually, like, my explanation for why I like it to somebody who usually thinks of it as just, like, a boss rush game, like, for you, but yeah, I don't know, so that's, I guess, like, to sort of maybe explain why, like, last podcast when I was saying, like, oh, Hollow Knight is sort of like Dark Souls but isn't, I think Hollow Knight just has that usual issue for me, which is like, oh, but it's still a video game, so there's, like, still, like, jumping stuff and there's still, like, boss fights that you got to do and stuff, and in Dark Souls feels like, I mean, yes, there's bosses and stuff, but it has so much more going on that you don't, like, you can almost, there's a lot of systems in the game too to make that stuff easier. So it just feels like there's more ways to, like, appreciate Dark Souls than you would assume if you just sort of take your time, I guess. I don't know. I know you said to keep this short, but it's just so hard to, explain, like, because Dark Souls is a lot of things to me. So, but I mostly just like it because it's a game that just feels so specific. And it just it just seems uncompromising. Yeah.
That's good. Okay.
Okay, now part two.
It's probably a good place to stop.
So with part two, let's talk about... We haven't covered the second game. That was just the first game.
No!
So Majula...
The
soundtrack is really good.
That's the one thing you are so bad at. The one thing you are so bad at is just succinct.
Well, because it's hard. Because I've thought about Dark Souls for every minute of my life.
I know. That's why I'm trying to like curate this experience for our podcast listeners so that this doesn't end up being a 50-hour podcast. But I think that that's actually a good explanation and that... At least we'll leave people with maybe a better understanding as to why.
I'll probably always talk about it in the podcast, like, because I always talk about it anyway. But I think it's one of those games, you probably have games like this, right, too, where it's just like, it's one of those games that you sort of think about whenever you think about a game. You know what I mean? Like, when you play a game, it's like, gosh, like, that kind of reminds me of Dark Souls. But not like, oh, that just reminds me of Dark Souls because it's a similar thing, but just kind of like, oh, yeah, Dark Souls did a different thing. And like, it's like almost like a starting point for you to sort of like, I don't know, compare things to. I don't mean like, is this as good as Dark Souls? I just mean like, how did Dark Souls
It's your
do?
Frame of reference.
And so talking about games, in a way I'm sort of always talking about Dark Souls.
He really is, though. He really fucking is. All the time. Every day. Every time we talk about something, it always comes back to Dark Souls. So, oh my God. Well, we'll just leave it at that. Because we have to end the podcast now. So... Oh my gosh. This is the Dark Souls of this podcast. Okay, so Tyler, where can we find you on the internet?
I don't know anymore, honestly. I'm on Twitter, at Tyler Culp, TylerCulp. I'm also on YouTube, which is youtube.com/Tyler_Culp. Let's see, I'm on Twitch too. We haven't been streaming, but yeah, I'm on Twitch, it's OtterXPop. No. And then also, I mean, we mostly stream on Blizzard Watch, which is just Blizzard Watch on Twitch. I'm also writing for Blizzard Watch. I have a story, I think it was up last week too, but it was about the like new competitive season Overwatch and like how to get the most out of it, which I think is pretty good. Is that it? That's it.
I think that's it. Yeah. And you can find me on Twitter at AppleciderWitch, on Twitch at AppleciderWitch. I also stream on Blizzard Watch. Yeah. Also, if you want to follow the show on Twitter, we are at MISFcast. Also, if you have any questions or comments, we will read them on the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you can send those questions to the Twitter, too, if you want. I mean, that's what happened this week.
Yeah. If you don't want to email us, just tweet at us. It's super cool. But we also have an email address at makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com. Also, you can please rate and review us on iTunes. Super helpful. We will read your review on the show if you do choose to do that. Also, tell all your friends that you love the show. It really helps us out, retweeting and, you know, talking about the show. It gets us new listeners, which is always wonderful and awesome. So keep on sharing the show. And if you have any feedback, let us know. I've heard a lot of like really great comments about stuff that we've covered or stuff that people want us to cover. If you have anything like that, just send it to us. We'll be happy to talk about it.
I haven't talked about Dark Souls 2 yet. So if you want me to talk about that next week.
No Dark Souls 2. Anyway, thank you for listening to the show.
Dark Souls 3 as well. The DLC is kind of interesting.
We'll be back next week.
Bye.